time on the show, Bernie Wrightson draws distorted, disturbing, and distended.
Getting a haircut. Really the best time to be watching The Ring.
And mapping the difference between disturbing and horrifying. All this and more on Comics Are Great.
Happy Halloween, everybody. It's Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live at the Ann Arbor District Library on the corner of 5th and William Wilson.
We are the original Ghostbusters, Spencer, Tracy, and Kong.
And your host, Dr. Zayas.
All right, I'm done. I just wanted to
No, that'd be General Urko.
General Urko, yeah.
Can you guys even hear me with this?
Not well, no.
Yeah, no, okay.
I think it's much better that way.
All right, let's switch back.
Oh,
no, it's really
he would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for the meddling kids.
So this show is recorded every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library Netcast Studio in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William. comics.adl.org. This is the show where we talk about comics, how to make comics, what goes into the comics lifestyle, all the things that surround this medium that we love so much. And my name is Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist. Over there,
I am Paul Story, comic book writer and occasional writer of prose.
And then, so yeah, Paul, you're returning to the show. For those who are new to the show, this guy's on here a lot. So if you don't like this one, don't go back into the archives.
Don't look in the archives. nice Halloween theme. Don't check the archives.
Well, I'm trying to use reverse psychology here. You know, Mama's Rule, you put it on the high shelf and the kids actually want it. Don't watch the archives. So at youtube.com/comicsaregreat, by the way. So then over there, we have another guy returning to the show.
Hey, I'm Dave Carter. I'm a librarian at the University of Michigan where I select comics and video games and all sorts of other cool stuff.
Wow, you guys got that just the upbeat or up-tempo rhythm going on today.
It is Halloween, the best day of the year. favorite holiday.
And Dave, you also manage the video game library at the University of Michigan. You did say that. Okay. I just want to make sure that we underline that with black crayon because that is a really, really cool job.
And maybe some orange crayon to go with it.
Black and orange crayon. And then I turn to the Skypes and we have a special guest today, somebody who I've been meaning to talk to for about going on 3 years now. The artist of one of my favorite comics on the internet, John David Guerra. Oh, God, I can never say roll that R right.
Guerra's fine if you can't roll your R's.
Guerra. See, I can sort of do it. But John David Guerra of NightmareProWrestling.com, and I'll give a quick introduction to this comic if you haven't heard it. I mean, today's the day to read it. Because it's Halloween, right?
And it's scary good.
But, oh my gosh, we turned into the Muppet Show.
Disney's going to buy us any second.
Let's not even go there. So, Nightmare Pro Wrestling, what's it about, John? I mean, you've done conventions. You've done this pitch before.
Yeah, it's about pro wrestling monsters competing to become the Nightmare Pro Wrestling champion. And, the main story follows a young monster named Grave and his tag team partner named Lobo, who's a cowardly werewolf, as they have fun and they try to hone their wrestling skills.
And your art style is some of the most fun stuff to look at in the entire world. And I admitted this publicly that when I was going through those He-Man redesigns on my website a year ago, it was partially inspired by your work on Nightmare Pro Wrestling and also the work of Luis Escobar and in the film that he was working on at the time.
Oh, thanks.
But it's just so dynamic and energetic, and your pages are really, really fun to look at. Matt, is there any chance we can pull up John's page that I sent to you to I can show the audience?
Oh, look at that.
It's right next to me on the screen. John, you can't see this, but the audience at home can see to my right, to your left. Look at this page and look at how he uses like non-traditional reading flow to like guide our eye from panel one to panel two. Then panel two zigs down. Oh, I should point the other way. Zigs down across that table. I'm looking at the latest page on your site, John. And then and panel three is sort of like an inset watching what's happening on the table in panel four. Are you still there, John?
Oh, John froze.
He froze for a second. Let's see if we can get him back.
But what a great expression.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Great. So anyway, yeah, it's got a fun, energetic style, and he does really, really cool stuff on the page. And some of the desktop images that you got on there that you were posting recently on Google+ were super, super fun to look at. So anyway, I'm a big fan of your work, and I'm really glad you could be part of the show today.
Oh, thank you.
So, Topic time. We introduced everybody.
Topic time.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from.
So, you know, Halloween, scary stories, horror stories, and being to warm us up to get into this, I thought it would be fun to like do as a thinking exercise is to reminisce on this is Halloween. This is the day where, you know, several decades ago, guys like us would have gone out on the streets in a costume and hit people up for candy, right?
Yeah. On the street, going from house to house.
Nowadays, you have to go to a mall, or you have to go to a library. They had trick or treating in the library today. Yeah. And you
well,
do
I still
it
do it, but I get weird looks.
Do you really? Because I was going to ask. That was my first question: is what was the age that you guys all were when you stopped trick or treating? When were you too old?
It was thinking 15 around, and then I went up through. I mean, longer than I should have.
Yeah,
I'm sure because you know candy.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. But also dressing up. And
oh, yeah, you always have to dress. The kids who go around without dressing up.
Like a younger sibling to take with you and just use that as an excuse.
Oh, yeah.
Or just get some kid from the neighborhood.
Yeah, Mrs. Robinson, I'll take your kids out trick-or-treating.
No,
you got me a little alarmed what happened after the trick-or-treating, Mrs. Robinson.
All right, hold on. So, Paul, how old were you?
I think about 13, maybe.
13?
Yeah, about I think about that. You know, supposedly that's the age you're supposed to transition into Halloween parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more kind of.
But you got to get invited to the parties first, Paul.
I know. That's why I never went to any. But thanks for stomping on my joke.
I was right there with you, bro. I mean, I was sitting at home reading Werewolf by Night by myself with a single finger.
Jersey and I are like, I wonder what people are doing tonight that aren't sitting at home. Watching It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Yeah. So, John, what age were you when you gave it up? Hung the cowl.
I don't know. I wouldn't say like 5 years ago, probably.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, when you were 15?
In the neighborhood where I grew up, there's still people that go out trick-or-treating. Wow. And I would just go with like younger siblings or, you know... Yeah. Younger cousins or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that always helps when you do have younger relatives. I think I went trick-or-treating as recently as 2001. I would have been in my 20s or something. And it was because I had young cousins to take out.
I think I need to develop a trick-or-treat bot that looks like a little kid.
Yeah.
It's part of your costume. You know, part of your costume is this little fake so kind of puppet thing. Like, no, look, I got a kid with me.
Okay, but then next question. Best costume that you ever wore? Favorite costume? And, I mean, and Cooper costumes are included in the mix. It doesn't have to be something that you made by hand. So,
see, all my good costumes were post trick-or-treating. I mean,
oh, they were when you were partying.
Yeah.
So you dressed as a sexy witch, and
actually, my favorite costume of all time. Although I've had a couple that I really like. My favorite was probably my Captain America costume.
Yeah.
Oh, nice!
It was. I was really happy with it, and I did learn why you need. You know, everybody makes fun of people superheroes wearing their shorts on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Has never worn a leotard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need. Trunks over the leotard. You need it.
For the good of humanity.
For the good of humanity. Unless you're very outgoing.
So, okay, well, now we know. And we also should say, like, that's something we don't get to talk about enough on the show, is that Paul is a Captain America scholar. You're both a Robin Hood scholar and a Captain America scholar.
I would say aficionado. I mean, scholar puts me into a rare... I know some actual, like, Robin Hood scholars, and they would put me to shame.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I'd be
so,
like, I read this.
So, Captain America geek, then.
I'll go with... I go with aficionado.
Show over, God, Paul. You and your semantics.
By the way, you've got the gorilla fur in your beard.
In my flesh beard?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's part of the costume. So,
yeah.
Dave, what about your favorite?
So, I went to a superhero-themed Halloween party, and I went as Clark Kent. Oh. I had the blue suit on and thing, and then I had the Superman shirt on underneath the underneath the stuff, and then occasionally would take off the glasses and open up the shirt and where'd Clark go? That sort of thing. So
nice.
That went well.
But did you get the Clark Kent black rimmed glasses, or just wear?
No, I just wore, because these are like prescriptions, so you know.
Yeah,
I wanted to be able to see during the party as well.
This is something, and I want to give a plug, a shout out, and God, we are going to talk about comics. I swear to God, everybody.
We should probably also, you know.
We're going to get John. But talking about Clark Kent is that I Dave Roman and I did a couple episodes of the Saturday Supercast, which we only do like once a year, episodes 29 and 30 at sugarycereals.com. And one of the things we talked about was I never even thought of this. Cause I only started wearing glasses in the last couple of years. But when you're a kid and you're wearing glasses, there's only so many things you can be for Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a zombie with glasses.
I'm a ghost with glasses.
I never thought of that, but it does kind of diffuse the whole thing. So now, John, we'll close out this discussion on Halloween costumes by asking, what was one of your favorites? If you only stopped 5 years ago, you got a lot of costumes in your catalog.
Well, Halloween's always been like really big in my family. And like every year we have like a big like Halloween party, and our family like does like props and everything.
Wow.
And I think my favorite costume was like 2 years ago. I was like an evil magician, but like my costume wasn't too extravagant, but I had like these props. Like I had like a severed rabbit's head in my top
hat. An evil stage magician. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. Right. Evil stage magician.
Nice.
Not like an evil comic book wizard kind of
magician. Well, I thought that was probably where he was going, but I wanted to make sure.
So like an evil David, is it David Blaine? Is that his name?
That is one of the
those kinds of magicians, but illusionists.
I had
like a magician suit on, you know, like with the tails and stuff. David Blaine is just usually like t-shirt and jeans.
The really traditional, you know, stage magician.
The Zatara of the
There you go.
There we go. Bringing it back to
comics,
tights and everything.
Yeah.
So okay, so that's you actually make your costumes. You don't go out and get the pre-made out of the box plastic smock thing.
We will pick up a few things that we need, you know, bought, but usually make our own costumes.
Yeah.
So
we were talking briefly before we started recording about Cooper masks. I don't know if anybody had any thoughts on that they wanted to share with, like, what the kids are missing out on these years. Because I was at Target recently.
Really awful molded, you know, because they like Spider-Man was okay because it's faceless. But, like, I remember seeing, like, girls getting stuck in the Wonder Woman mask.
Or, like, the Cinderella mask. Yeah, it looks like her death mask.
Yeah. it reminds you of why they were able to turn the failed Captain Kirk mask into Michael Myers.
Oh, you know, that's like, right.
There's just not enough definition to the features. And it's like,
oh, that's so funny. That's
and
so
the Ben
creepy.
Cooper mask had that just tiny little oval in the lips,
which would always snap a little bit and cut your lip.
Yeah.
But I had the pleasure of introducing a 17-year-old to Cooper masks. She had never heard of them. She didn't know what I was talking about. And so I'm like, well, the mask was made out of this really cheap plastic. She's like, oh, so it was like rubber or something. I'm like, no, it was like this really hard plastic. She's like, you mean it was like silicone or something? I'm like, no, this is before all that stuff. We didn't have the materials that nice. And I heard myself sounding really old. Yeah. But
it's like if you took the packaging that like all your blister package and then like shave it down by half so there's no actual rigidity to it and then make it white with, you know, some bad paint over it.
Right.
That's a Ben Cooper mask.
But there was something magical about going to the store and seeing all those rows of boxes with those faces staring up back at you out of the boxes. So, you know, what am I going to be? And it's like 100,000 different things there.
I could be the Flintstones.
Yeah, I could be the Flintstones. I could be Frankenstein. I could be Captain Kirk. I could be,
I could be the spider, which is not Spider-Man. The green and white one that Steve Miller wore the spider mask on the cover of on the album cover for Joker.
I don't even know what you're talking
about.
Oh,
you don't?
No.
You should look it up. It's this like green and white mask with some web and stuff on it, and I don't even know what it was supposed to be. I just know that I ended up getting it because my parents didn't get me Spider-Man.
I'm seeing it now. Yeah, and it's actually like a spider, isn't it? Is this
sort of
Yeah, so, I mean, nobody can see it on screen, but anyway.
And I can't see it. No, that's
that's
not
it. Well, Eric Closter anyway. In the chat will no doubt track it down for us, and it'll be in the show notes after the recording. So, okay. So, you know, we got to get to actual topic. We're going to talk about scary stories. It's Halloween, after all. And it's an opportunity to talk about what makes a story scary. Now, we had, you know, how about this, Matt? We were debating on whether or not we were going to play this R.L. Stine video on the show, but, you know, YouTube's bots might come through and say, like, hey, that's copyrighted material. I'm going to take this video down. That would make me very sad. So we'll just link to it in the show notes. But there's a great video with R.L. Stine talking about what makes a scary story. It's a commercial for his new book, but it's on YouTube. But you guys, I wonder if you guys can open up the salvo on what is it, like, inciting examples of some of your favorite scary stories. It doesn't have to be a comic. But what is it? What do you think has to go into making something frightening? I'm guessing disembowelment, right? It's got to just be, you got to tear out somebody's guts and spread them all over the walls. And,
you know, disembowelment, defenestration, decapitation.
Defenestration. Well, that means throw them out the window, kids, for those, yes. For those who aren't as well-read as Paul.
Or old. Yeah. but you haven't gotten there in your vocabulary lists yet.
Yeah, but so, no, I mean, seriously, some people think that scary means gore, right?
And well, you know, the funny thing, though, is that even gore, for the most part, there's two elements, really, that make things scary. Suspense and surprise, which people often confuse the two. Suspense is sort of this building of anticipation, where it's that moment where in the movies or any story, you know, the person is walking through the house and certain that there's something horrible there, but not finding it, mm-hmm. and the tension is just building and building and building and building, and which is different than surprise, which is sort of like, you know, you turn the page or turn the corner or whatever, and all of a sudden something pops out at you, and right. you go like and that's, you know, suspense often ends with surprise, but like often people will confuse the two. Just want to like throw shock after shock after
jump
shock.
Scare.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, that old gag of looking in the mirror and then the guys behind them. Right. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
But those are two key elements, I think, when you're trying to make something scary is you want the reader waiting.
I think atmosphere also plays like a big part in it.
Yeah.
What do you mean by atmosphere?
Giving it like that kind of like creepy kind of vibe, kind of mood, like even like of course bringing it back to comics, I mean, I'm sure Jersey's happy with that. Like there's some horror manga that, you know, it's like your typical manga illustrations that you see, and then when it starts getting to the more horror elements, there's like these grotesque details like added to the characters and added to like the visuals of like the horror aspects. And the same thing with like movies, you know, like it's that tone. Well, I know not all those movies like have like certain like that great atmosphere, but I'm more of a fan of that kind of like horror, like that atmospheric kind of horror. Like a recent movie that came out that has a lot of that, I think, is The Woman in Black with mm-hmm. Daniel Radcliffe.
I've not seen that.
No? I've just seen the ads and stuff for it, but yeah, it's got that.
It's very like Victorian and very like dark, where most of the lighting is just like him holding up a candle, you know. Yeah. So the anticipation of something popping out of the shadows is like there, and you're like, oh, it's coming, and it never comes, you know.
Yeah.
And, what about isolation then? Because it sounds like both of you guys are talking about isolation as well. And I think of like in all of the, it's like a trope that gets used in a lot of these scary stories. Like, let's split up. Let's all go look in different corners of this big scary house.
Yes. Yes. You know, hey, Velma and
yeah, Velma and Shaggy.
Daphne and I are going to go here. Well, Scooby, you and Shaggy go down into the basement.
Yeah,
we're going over to this room to make out. Well, you guys, yeah, out there.
They actually did a Cartoon Network parody video where they got the original voice cast together, and like they're like, let's split up, and like Shaggy's like, oh, Daphne. Or Daphne says, oh, I'll go with Shaggy and Scooby. And then Freddy goes up to her and he's like, Daphne? And he starts to add to his head. And she's like, oh, that's right. I'll go with Fred. But anyway, but they do this, right? And I think about, I was thinking about this topic in the morning, I was thinking about a game that, like, the only scary game I've ever played was Resident Evil, like the Resident Evil series. I played up to, I think, 3. And part of what made that game so fun and so scary.
He means
scary,
levels, by the way, not actually.
Levels. It's not levels in that game. It's a newer game, Paul. There's no leaderboard. And there's no stage world 1-1 anymore.
I have no idea what that means.
Where do I put the tokens in this thing? What is this? No. But, I'm making him mad.
Paul Smash.
You got to wear the gorilla mask when you do that. But anyway, the game was, is that, I mean, you're alone. You're alone in this creepy police station with all this really eerie art that has disturbing messages that you have to decode and everything. And that's what made the game so fun. It wasn't the zombie killing, because there aren't that many zombies in, like, the beginning of the game. Once you get through, like, the initial zombie horde and get into the police station, you're just alone with this creepy piano music for, like, a long time. And that's what made the game so fun. Was I'm just wondering, like, what role does isolation play in making a scary story?
It's sort of the helplessness of it. I'm into stuff like, you know, existential angst, you know, you know, the H.P. Lovecraft stuff where, you know, you realize that, you know, there are these oppressive forces in the universe that are going to come down and, you know, like, devour us or take us over or whatever like that. Or loss of control, I think, is another thing that go to horror, like, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and actually, in certain respects, the like the werewolf myth is about personal loss of control.
Right, right.
Although, like, some of the traditional stuff, people were, it was less of a curse and more like something that people took on themselves. You know, they would, but that idea of... we're frightened by the savagery within us.
Yeah, the Dr. Jekyll sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the Hulk, that idea that inside of us there is a monster.
Right.
And that's also...
or that our secret inner life will be exposed to the world.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Thing.
I think it's interesting you're talking about Lovecraft, because Lovecraft had a great way of making us feel not just isolated as individuals, but isolated as a race.
Right, right.
I mean, it's like, oh, humanity is so insignificant.
Right, right.
That even, you know, even if there's 100 of you, it you're alone. So I think that, you know, that is that isolation, that sense of being cut off from support.
Yeah, I think it's also like, go watch a scary movie with your friends, and it's not that scary, but if you're home alone and you put on a scary movie, it's just a little bit scarier, you know?
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I mean, even listening to scary stories, I was working in my basement studio by myself one afternoon. It was winter, too, so it was like dark at like 5 o'clock, and it's getting dark in there, and I'm listening to the Horror Etc. podcast. I don't know if you guys listen to that.
I listen to that. Yeah.
That's a good show. And they were talking about Japanese horror films, and which I have not watched much of, because I saw like the first 20 minutes of The Ring. By the way, playing on a TV in a barber shop. Who does that? I've got a guy cutting my hair. He's got sharp things around my head. He's got The Ring playing in front of me, right?
And he's like, you know, if you watch this, you're going to be dead.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But
sorry about your ear.
But I haven't watched much of it. But just listening to them talk about like the way all these little ghost children get involved in these stories, and then all of a sudden, like my cat knocks something over on the other side of the basement street, I'm like, you know. So yeah, being by yourself does accentuate the scariness. Doesn't it?
I actually remember I was on a car ride back from Florida. I was visiting family, and it was really, really early in the morning, dark, and there was whatever song was playing had some mention of the devil in it, and I guess I was still a little tired, a little punchy, and I couldn't bring myself to look in my rearview mirror, because I was like, I'm going to look up, and there's going to be someone or something.
And it's going to be John Lovitz with that devil costume on. Which would be pretty scary, actually.
And he's all like, I haven't worked in a while.
So what's the difference? I'm curious what you guys think about this. What's the difference between frightening and disturbing? Or is there a difference between those things?
I think disturbing creeps up on you. It's more of a, or you gradually realize that something is wrong, as opposed to frightening, which you suddenly realize something is wrong.
Mm. Mm.
I'll go with, I mean, one of my favorite horror comics ever is Black Hole by Charles Burns, where it starts out as this, you know, 70s suburbia sort of thing, and then gradually you as a reader realize, and the kids in the comic realize, that something is wrong here. People are changing, and the changes are slow to start out with. You know, somebody's like growing an extra finger or a little tail or something like that.
Yeah.
And then as you go further into it, it gets more and more disturbing as you go in.
I think of the black, it's been described as a black comedy, Parents. Have you guys seen that? Randy Quaid, about the kid who finds out that his parents are cannibals.
I was going to say, that'd be disturbing right there.
Yeah, it's
having Randy Quaid as a parent.
It is Randy Quaid. Yeah, probably. And it's like a 50s suburbia film about this little boy, and there's just something off about his parents. He can't put his finger on it, and then it's the slow realization where they're hinting that they're doing something really bad with meat. You know, and like halfway through, you're like, wait a second, those are people, aren't they? No, they're not going to go there. And then they go there. And then, yeah, so like there's this looming, it's almost like it's kind of a company with dread, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like I think about the movies The Omen with, you know, like the original Omen. And I tried watching that with my wife and she couldn't take it. And I'm like, what, is it too scary? She's like, no, it's too dreadful. Like, I know this isn't going to end well, you know? And watching Gregory Peck, handsome Gregory Peck, slowly fall into this abyss is not my idea of entertainment, right?
Yeah.
And that's different than just, like, shock horror, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, too, that we often will call stuff horror because it's got monsters in it, and it's not necessarily.
Okay.
You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for example, gets labeled as horror, and there's some horrific elements, but it's really an action-adventure. I mean, she's killing monsters. For the most part, a true horror story ends horribly. It's not, you know, like, oh, horrible things happen, and I walk away and everything's, you know, the sun's coming up, and we're all whistling as we get away.
Yeah, all is not set right with the world at the end of the story in a horror story.
The world's
been irrevocably changed for the worse.
Yeah, that's so many Lovecraft stories end with just, like, people going crazy.
I haven't read Lovecraft, but I read Stephen King's The Mist. And I still haven't seen the movie, but I've read the short story that the movie's based on. And, yeah, that does not end happily for anybody involved, right?
And, well,
I think that's why J-horror also, like, works a lot for me, because it doesn't end very happily a lot of the times.
So it doesn't end with, like, Jamie Lee Curtis in a hospital bed going, like, whew, glad that's over.
Well, at least with some of the slasher-type stuff, you only end up with, like, you know, you have the sole survivor kind of thing, which is at least horrific in that it ends with that isolation you were talking about.
Mm.
But, you know, the whole thing when, like, the Scooby gang, whether the original or the Buffy Vampire Slayer version, where they, you know, oh, everything was terrifying, but mostly we came out okay. Then you're dealing more with, you know, you might be dealing with suspense and horrific elements, but you're, you know, that's sort of, as a rule, I don't like horror, true horror that much. I don't like the, I like the triumph of the human spirit.
Well, you're the wrong day for that.
Halloween is all about overcoming darkness.
All right.
So, I mean, you don't find that entertaining in its own way to end on a bad note? What I'm trying to drive at is, I'm not trying to attack your point of view. I'm trying to get at here is why are some people attracted to that? I mean, because
they're too happy. They're too self-satisfied with their own lives.
What's weird, though, is I've still been trying to pin this down for years, is that I cannot watch, like, J-horror films are just too freaky to me. I can't watch films like Saw where it's, like, The gore is right there, and the human suffering is really apparent.
I can't watch those either.
Even the movie Titanic, where all those people are dying, that was too much for me. It was like, there's too much human suffering going on the screen right now, and I was covering my eyes when the boat was sinking and everything. And it wasn't the Leo and Kate thing that was bothering me. It was watching all these poor people falling to their deaths that I just couldn't take. But for some reason, like things like Carpenter films, John Carpenter films, I eat that stuff like poi. Like, The Fog is great. and it ends badly. And then I think of The Prince of Darkness ends badly. And I don't know, there's something kind of haunting and it sticks with you, right? I don't know. Can anybody speak to this? Is like, what's the attraction there about ending on a bad note?
I think it's that fun aspect. Like you say, John Carpenter. I love this stuff too, and it's just like a lot of fun. It's almost like that when you're a kid, kind of like that spooky adventure sort of thing, you know, like that spooky mystery adventure sort of thing going.
Oh. I guess, like in the case of Prince of Darkness, the case I've made for why I like it so much is that it's like mythological battles in a horror setting, mm-hmm. right? It's God versus anti-God, and like they use like quantum physics and tachyons to explain some of the stuff that's going on. And then you got Alice Cooper as a zombie. So it's like, oh, everything about this is terrific. But it's not so much about like, oh, there's a curse on a child that was killed in a brutal way, and now if you watch this TV show, you're going to pull yourself inside out or anything like that.
It's also a safe way to experience those emotions mm-hmm. because you know it's a story. Unlike if you were to like, I mean, actual real world horror, no, thank you.
you don't want to have to go through life chopping heads off of stuff?
No, you know. Or, you know, truly horrible things happen to people every day in the real world. Yes. And you don't want to actually experience that.
Yeah.
But when you experience it in a fictional setting and you can sort of get those feelings out without having to actually go through that, I think there's a catharsis involved in that.
So, Paul, you're not a fan of, like, the Soylent Green,
I
Planet of the Apes. By the way, Planet of the Apes doesn't end so good, the first one.
I've watched it. I that has a horrific element to it, but I wouldn't call it a horror film.
What about Soylent Green? Soylent Green is...
I actually never seen Soylent Green.
You know how it ends.
I do.
Okay. But
I don't see what the problem is. Protein is protein, man. That's what Randy
Spoiler
Quaid
alert.
Says. Well, no, I think I danced around that pretty
Soylent Green is tofu, everybody. That's what we're talking about.
Way to go, Jersey.
All right, let's talk comics.
Wait, did you say tofu?
Yeah, tofu. Edward G. Robinson tofu, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So let's talk comics. We have some comics to talk about, to talk specifically about these visual aspect of making a scary story. I saw you guys both brought piles.
I did. Yes.
One moment. Comics, thank you.
And John, feel free to, if you could think of any scary comics that you've ever, read in the past that you might want to talk about on the show, or web comics that matter. Or Nightmare Pro Wrestling, you talk about how you think about writing like the more scary, dangerous elements of that. But we'll start with Paul.
One of the most terrifying story arcs that I experienced, I think I was like 11 or 12 mm-hmm. when I read this, is in Werewolf by Night by Doug Mensch, Don Perlin. And the guy who is cursed to be a werewolf and some friends go to this horrible, horrible haunted house. Like this man is.
You put it in the,
yeah, I've got to say.
On the comic cam.
Put it in the comic cam.
There we go.
There we got. Oh, they, so. Yeah, both work out. The story of this like despicable man and how he just dragged people into darkness. I'm 12 or 11 or 12, and it was horrifying. And there was, let me see if I can find the, there's this one image that just sticks with me.
I'm not seeing any EC comics in anybody's piles. Was that just like too much of a gimme?
That may be. Where this one, where a werewolf is attacking the werewolf. It turns out to be his ancestor that was the first one cursed.
Mm.
And the
face is melting off.
The psychic girl manages to change him back to human, and he starts talking, and then, his face basically melts off, turns into this horrific skull, and then he just bursts into flames. And that just, like, the kind of way that they went through that.
Well, they're doing stuff with the ending on the end of the page, right?
Yeah,
like the skull moment is happening on the end of the page.
Funny thing though is that you think the skull moment, that's the most horrific part.
Yeah,
And then, boom, you hit the top of the next page, and he, like, bursts into this, you know.
Oh, but wait.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to start him on fire, and then we're going to stuff living snakes down his throat, too.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, it was just this...
But, okay, Paul, question.
Yes.
And I know you were 12 when you read this thing,
yeah.
But it's drawings, dude. It's even more elevated than film. This isn't a real guy. It's a cartoon of a guy getting his face melted off and started on fire. Why is this so scary? What do they do?
Because they draw you into the story. They make you care about the characters.
Ah!
They make you, they make you interested. In this case...
We didn't cover that in our earlier discussion,
yeah.
Right? Making you care about the character's fate,
yeah.
Too, right?
So. And the more you identify with the characters or care for the characters, it's not necessarily both, but usually both, then you're really invested in their survival. And that's one of the reasons why when people die in these films where you're kind of not so invested in them, they're like that... gradual building up process.
The chubby kid in the wheelchair on Friday the 13th who goes down the stairs and gets the harpoon through him. Yeah,
you're like, oh, that's horrible. That's too bad. But then eventually...
But when Scatman Crothers in The Shining gets it, oh my gosh, that's brutal, right?
I don't think I've ever seen The Shining.
You've not seen The Shining either?
I told you I'm not a big horror fan. I love scary elements, but I'm not a big... Like straightforward. It took
Dave
till
help me out here. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I've not seen The Shining.
Oh,
John, Matt, help me out. Somebody,
you're all alone, Jersey.
The Shining's a good example of a really good balance of disturbing and horror too. Because there's that scene with all the people in the costumes at the end. The scene in the bar with the ghost bartender. The gal in the bathtub. I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And I remember those scenes.
The ghost twins. That always gets me.
The girl twins. Yeah. You're going to play with us forever and ever. Oh. Anyway, continue. Yeah. Sorry. I was just reminded, but so you, what else do you got?
Oh well, and actually, I just brought I brought some of my my Twisted Journeys books that I did. It's funny because like
so you've
I say,
written scary
I'm not
stories.
I'm not that big a horror fan, but I've written all these kind of horrific things, and especially with the Twisted Journeys, they're set up as you pick your own path through the storyline.
Yeah.
So. You end up with all these horrible endings, you know, where, oh, you died. Oh,
yep,
you died. Oh, everybody around you died, you know. And I was never a big fan of that sort of thing. It's one of the
but
reasons.
But do you like writing it?
It's an interesting challenge to kind of write something that's not in your wheelhouse.
And having to imagine, like, the six ways the character can die
in
the story.
In this case, like, more like 30 ways. And But yeah, and I got to deal with ghosts and zombies, and then the last one, my most recent one, I had a lot of fun because it's set in the Irish Hills in an abandoned amusement park and has fairies and like Celtic folklore, which people think of, oh, fairies, they're cute. No, Celtic folklore is horrific.
Yeah,
they are terrifying, terrifying creatures. You know. And I had fun playing with that too. You know, the whole, those elements of, of course, Halloween comes from Samhain, and there was the whole, or as people say, Samhain.
Oh, so it's not just the Danzig thing.
No.
Okay.
And, there's very, very strong Celtic mythic. Overtones for the whole wearing of masks and horrific elements and things.
Okay.
So that was a lot of fun. And then I also
My boyfriend is a monster,
is
which
the,
we talked
yes,
about before.
I have talked about My Boyfriend is a Monster, which is about a girl who falls in love with a new guy at school and found out he was not so much born as assembled. Again, that was one of those things where now this has got like paranormal romance and it's got a sense of humor to it and everything. But yeah, you have to find those moments that are just like disturbing or horrific.
This is a whole other thing that always puzzled me as a young boy when they'd come out with movies like Bram Stoker's Dracula, and there's Winona Ryder, and she's like, "Oh, this guy is hideous. I love him," you know. and I mean, as that nerdy little comic book boy who was the nice guy, who was a really good friend, and all that stuff, and then but this guy who really gives me a hard time, I dig him, you know. It always confused me as a kid. I wonder if you could, as having written one of these stories, can you explain this whole phenomenon, like, well, being attracted to the ghoulish and
I don't know, because in this instance, it's one of those times where his nature is hidden, and she falls for him as a person before she finds out that he is what we would call a monster.
So that's the fear, that this thing that you like isn't really what you think it is.
Well, and that actually works in Bram Stoker's Dracula, where she doesn't fall in love with the creepy old guy that Jonathan Harker meets at the beginning of the thing. By the time Winona meets him, he's like Mr. Slick, Victorian guy with his purple sun-tinted sunglasses.
Yeah, it's still Gary Oldman,
Hey, I know a lot of women who have a thing for Gary Oldman.
I'm just kidding. He was awesome as Commissioner Gordon. It's the best part of those movies, as a matter of fact. But isn't it also, like, I'm guessing it's like the whole, well, there's more to this than meets the eye, whereas, like,
yes,
the Keanu Reeves character, it's like he's what he is, right?
I have to trot this one out. I often say that Keanu Reeves gave a performance so wooden they could have driven him through the vampire's heart.
Hey-o! Phil was listening to the audio podcast afterwards. There was a gesture that went in there.
Yeah.
Like, ta-cha!
We'll be here all week, yeah.
Yep.
but isn't that part of the point of that character? I mean, wasn't Keanu just doing, like, a tour de force of playing a guy who was, like, an uninteresting
Jonathan
paramour?
Harker does not have to be that uninteresting. I mean, there's a difference between, being, normal or even a little dull, and just being like, there's no there.
Well, let's turn to Dave. I want to hear some of your comics.
So I brought some stuff. I put together this huge pile this morning and then realized I'd have to carry them walking across half an hour, so I left most of them at home.
There's a trail of comics.
I love Richard Sala's stuff, and I don't know if the camera can pick that up.
There we go.
Yeah. He does a lot of different things. Mostly it's kind of the gothic sort of tinged end of stuff. Peculia is one of his recurring characters who comes in several of his stories. She's kind of a more gothy Nancy Drew type. She sort of wanders into these situations and has to, like, get herself out by using her wits, kind of thing. So there's usually a chase scene in a Peculia story where she's being chased through a house or something like that by monsters of various sorts. But there's not I wouldn't call these horror things as much as, sort of picking up horror tropes like monsters and vampires and things like that.
Yeah.
It's definitely for an older audience, teenagers or above sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I love his art style and stuff. It's very,
he uses
blacks and whites.
Edward Gorey?
There's a little bit of that influence.
A little bit of gory in there, yeah.
But the good kind of gory.
Yes.
Yes. So I also brought along Zombies Calling by Faith Erin Hicks, which is a story about a zombie outbreak happens at this Canadian college, but the characters that have actually seen zombie movies, so they, like, sort of know what the rules are for dealing with zombies, and they're able to, they find out that they have, like, super cool, like, zombie killing powers because they think they should. And she's using a spork here on the cover to decapitate one of the zombies and stuff. And it's Faith Erin Hicks, and she's another wonderful, wonderful cartoonist.
We had Faith Erin Hicks on the show not too
long. Faith Erin Hicks has been on the show before. That's right. I'm noticing also that both Faith's book and what's the other fellow's name?
Richard Sala. Yeah.
Richard Sala. I have not seen this guy's work before. Both of these are in black and white. Now I'm wondering if that's
actually so is My Boyfriend is a Monster.
Yeah. Why? Yeah,
but
why not do them in color?
Atmosphere. Yes.
Yeah.
Giving John a nod.
It's not that you can't do good horror comics in color, but you do get that stark black and white contrast. You can use the inks, really darken up a page or lighten up a page depending on what you want to get out of it.
And the interesting thing is, I think sometimes there's an element of, just a horrible bring real world into it that, at some point it's oh, well, it is cheaper to do black and white.
Sure, sure.
But horror so lends itself, because you do have that stark contrast. You do have that atmosphere that can be made with black and white. I think that sometimes color will sort of dull the starkness of the imagery.
So conversely, one of my favorite horror comics is Beast of Burden by Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson, which is full watercolor painted stuff. Are you guys familiar
I've
with that?
I've seen a little bit, yeah.
It's one with the dogs and the cats of the neighborhood who are protecting the neighborhood from the supernatural forces. And it's very, like I said, watercolors and realistic. And you get that contrast of these pastoral scenes and stuff like that with the horror that's existing underneath the story. And so the contrast of what sort of stories are being told compared to what the art is being used sort of ramps up that sense of dread.
Yeah.
Things
yeah.
that are going on.
John, I'm curious. Are you thinking about this?
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I'm curious if this is something you're thinking about when you're designing your pages for Nightmare Pro Wrestling, because now, while I wouldn't call it necessarily a horror comic, it plays with the, you know, visual like titillation of scary monsters and action, but is this something where you think about, like, oh, this scene needs to be, like, dialed back in terms of, like, saturation or anything like that?
Actually, I try to keep it all, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but, like, everything that happens inside the wrestling ring, I tend to use like warmer colors. Like the backgrounds are all orange. There's like an orange tint to like everything.
Yeah.
Inside the castle, I try to make it like a little bit more spooky. Oh, and for those who don't know, like the arena is like inside the castle, and the castle's like on a giant tortoise. So, yeah.
God, that's a great bug.
Inside the castle, I try to make everything like green.
Yeah.
So to kind of give it like more of a spooky kind of like feel to it. So everything has like a green kind of atmosphere. And
but in the ring, everything is the amplified personas of wrestlers, right? It's like when Hulk Hogan turns himself on. Like, Hulk Hogan doesn't talk like that all the time, right? He's not like, what are you going to do when my pasta maniacs go wild all over you or whatever?
You don't know that.
No, I've watched Hogan Knows Best. I've seen it's actually a pretty funny show, but I've seen how the guy acts.
So sad.
But he doesn't drive around talking like that, like, hey, brother, get out of the way, you know? So it's like that's where they're turning on their personas. So that seems like that's the place for warmth, right?
Yeah. Right. That's where the action happens. So.
Yeah. See, that's great. I think that's awesome. Like, so there's some color theory going on in Nightmare Pro Wrestling. Another reason to pick that book apart.
Or up.
But I mean, like, read it to enjoy it, but also read it to study it.
Study it, yes.
Yes.
It's like pick it apart sounds a little, you know, like,
oh, Mr. Guerra, you did this wrong and that wrong. Yeah, no. Don't send him that email, everybody. The internet's full of those guys.
I actually posted, it's totally off topic, but I actually posted a somebody's wrong on the internet post on Twitter yesterday, and I was like, oh, I was that guy.
Yeah.
But it needed correcting, but I was that guy.
Was it because of the whole Disney Star Wars thing?
Tell me it was not.
Okay, good.
No, it was
thank
not.
You. So anyway, John, did you have a chance to think about any comics that you'd recommend as like scary comics to read today?
Yeah, I have some. One that I wish I had with me, but I don't, is the Bernie Wrightson adaption of Creepshow.
Oh yeah,
that's one of my favorites. I just love Bernie Wrightson's like artwork. It tends to bring out that creepiness. Yeah.
Well, and his Frankenstein,
incredible. That one's really good. Yeah.
Even his Spider-Man graphic novel Hooky had like a lot of horror elements in it. Did you guys ever read that? No,
I've seen it. Yeah.
It's got like blob monsters with eyeballs and horns and fangs and everything. But the thing about Wrightson, I don't know. Can you describe like what it is that he does in his artwork that makes it look? Because I know what you're talking about. But it there's just something he does that makes things seem like him and...
It's Wrightson-y.
Wrightson-y, yeah. I don't know. What is it, you know? Like, Steve Bissett is another one of those guys who could do that, too. They can make something look really eerie and creepy. I'm wondering if we can pin what that is.
I think it's almost like the grotesqueness of, like, his lines, almost. Like, even, like, his humans always look, like, a little bit, like, not human. I don't know how to describe it, like... Almost like a little bit more grotesque. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like they're like amplified by virtue of the amount of detail and like the kind of like elongated rubbery way he makes people look, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you can bring it up on the
Comic Cam.
I don't know if it'll work with the
We can try
display.
Matt, can we try getting this iPad image?
Oh, yay! Hey,
it's showing. Look at that, Doc Macabre. So, is this Wrightson?
Yeah, this is Wrightson. He just 2 or 3 years ago did it.
Yeah.
And there's something in like the feathering he uses, and like the black placement that he uses.
Well, he's very good with his contrast.
And again,
it does get back to that atmospheric. He's really brilliant at conjuring atmosphere with. With his
but
artwork.
Yeah, even as normal people look like there's something scary about them.
Yeah,
like you know they're the really tall butler or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Their faces are just a little longer than they need to be, and
yeah,
a little
and
more wrinkled than
on
they
their
need
faces
to be.
Also, are like amplified a little bit.
Yeah,
in the drawing.
Well, so I'm just noticing like this character here has got the extra lean face. You know. Very angular, very lean, almost, mm-hmm. you know, kind of face. And that, you know, that always sort of conjures images of disease or ill health.
Like Carol Struycken, I think he played the, he was on the Addams Family. He was Lurch on the Addams Family, and he was the giant in Twin Peaks.
Yep. And he was on.
You mean Lurch in the Addams Family movie?
Yes.
Like, that's Ted Cassidy.
No. The Addams Family movie. where he seems just a little too tall and a little too skinny, and his face is just a little too angular. It's not completely.
Going back
out of
to
their realm.
The difference between disturbing and horrifying, right? Disturbing is like, there's something off here.
Yeah.
And so maybe Wrightson's stuff is a little bit disturbing, right?
Yeah. He can do both.
Then he can bring out the monsters with the, you know, the stuff going all over
right,
the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Have you guys ever checked out?
I was going to say, we should check and see if John has more, because he only got one.
Yeah. Okay.
We were talking about manga earlier, and Uzumaki. I don't know if you guys have seen that manga.
It's right here, man.
Oh,
he's got one.
Yeah. He's got it, too. So
he's
we got
the second
comic
volume.
Cam. So go ahead and talk about it, John, while we put it on the comic cam.
Yeah, it's about a girl that returns to her hometown, and her hometown is like overrun by these spiral shapes, and everybody in the town starts going crazy because of these spiral shapes, and they kind of get like possessed by it in a way.
Yikes.
And I know it sounds like a little goofy, but if you read the manga,
it doesn't
like,
look goofy.
No, it's like this crazy concept which shouldn't work and does just wonderfully.
Yeah. It's like a simple concept, and they just take it to like a horrific place.
People's bodies like, changing, and
it's got beautiful artwork in it too.
Postulating slug people.
Yeah.
That's
a thing.
And it's also
that,
like
anytime.
Where,
pleasant dreams.
The artwork is just like, you know, like beautiful like manga artwork, and then as it starts to get to the more horrific parts. It's like amplified and super detailed, and you're like, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
Please stop now.
So this is Uzumaki by
Junji Ito.
Junji Ito. So that'll be linked in the show notes as well. Go to your local library today, everybody, and check this book out if you want to be freaked out. We got Erin Helmrich waiting to come in here with her book recommendations. So
can I squeak in a couple more?
Yes,
just
please.
Before?
Please.
I 30 Days of Night. Simply because Steve Niles was brilliant enough to go, hey, there are places where the sun does not rise for a long period of time, and let's set a vampire story there. It was just a brilliant concept, and then just horrendously rendered.
Yeah, the atmosphere in that one's pretty great.
It is, it is. And then actually Revival by Tim Seeley and Mike Norton. Mm. People start coming back from the dead, but not like zombies. They're just back, and no one knows what to do. And it's set in like rural Wisconsin, so there's nice kind of American Gothic sort of feel to it.
Mm.
And then Anathema by Rachel Deering, which is a werewolf saga set in the 1700s, 18th century. Then, there's werewolf lore, there's kind of Lovecraftian overtones, just really good stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, and then I also wanted to point at the Ray Bradbury Chronicles, the comic series.
Oh, yeah?
And
oh, yeah.
Dave Gibbons did some of it. Now, Dave Gibbons is not a guy that I would look at and go, like, oh, his stuff is horrifying. But when he did the adaptation of some of Bradbury's more scarier stories, like Come Down into the Cellar. Do you guys remember that one where the kids mm-hmm. do all the mail-aways to get mushrooms in the mail? They grow mushrooms in their basement, and it turns out the mushrooms are actually aliens that are taking over the minds of the people of the town. And it ends with the dad being the last guy who's not taking over, and his son is saying, come on down to the cellar, come on down to the cellar. And he goes because he knows that there's no place to go.
Right.
Right? Might as well just acquiesce to the situation. Yep. And that's one of those horror stories that ends just dreadfully. But Gibbons does such a good job making that story mm-hmm. just even that much more frightening. So I'd recommend looking for those as well. Okay, so we got to switch out. Aaron Helmrich is here. So I guess, Dave, I'm sorry to say, you get ejected.
I get ejected. All right.
See, so, that's why I picked the,
so,
this.
So this Dave Carter of yet another comicsblog.blogspot.com.
Yep. Dave reads comics on the Twitters and occasionally here. So
we'll have you back again soon to talk more about Mini Comics Day coming up in just a few months.
Yeah, March seems like a long ways away, but it really isn't.
It really isn't. And we'll talk more about Mini Comics Day and then also some other things that we've got cooking up for the area. So
excellent.
Thank you for being here, Dave.
Yep, thank you all.
You can go into the control room and actually chime in if you want. There's a microphone in there where you can join us in the conversation sort of remotely as a disembodied voice. So, but now,
which, terribly appropriate for this time of year.
That's right. But just make sure that you, Dave, when you're coming in, you have to be going, ooh, okay, and now I'm going to make my point, ooh, like that. So, Aaron Helmrich, the graphic novel selector of the Ann Arbor District Library.
Hello.
So, good to see you.
Good to see you. Well, I was going to bring
Wait, I thought you'd be in a costume. It's Halloween.
Well, I get to be behind the scenes this year for the first time, so I kind of took a break. I normally am down in the trenches with the toddlers on Halloween, so
ooh, now that
I'm
is
taking
scary.
A vacation break, a costume break. But if you guys talked about, I know it's technically not a graphic novel, but it is timely because it's one of the books out there, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, with Stephen Gammell's illustrations. Are you familiar with that one?
I've heard.
Basically, it's an awesome book of scary stories, but that wouldn't be as popular as it was for the past 25 years, and they just reissued the anniversary issue and switched out the illustrations. And I can't remember, I think it's Brett, the guy who illustrated the series of unfortunate events, took it over.
Oh.
Mm. Anyway, I tried to find a copy. I couldn't find it. I could show you the awesome illustrations, but I just brought along what are my favorite, technically not horror, but true crime. I'm a big fan of Rick Geary's books. Mm-hmm. And all of his, you know, true crime murder stories. So a different take on that, but definitely for people who want to still read gruesome stuff, but in a slightly more documentarian way.
I seem to remember talking about this before. The Beast of Chicago is about that dude who built a hotel with all the torture chambers.
Yes, and The Devil in the White City is the same person. He also went to U of M. He was here at the medical school before, so he was learning some of his
he's a local
tips and
boy.
Tricks. Yes.
Yeah. And he became the first American documented American serial killer.
Exactly.
Way go.
Ray Ann Arbor.
And then, of course, Jack the Ripper. But The Bloody Benders is a really gruesome and interesting story. A group of people in the middle of the prairie who would have people come in and get readings, you know, kind of, you know,
psychic
readings or whatnot, but in front of a curtain, and then somebody behind the curtain would hit them in the head with a hammer. But the interesting thing about this book is that apparently Laura Ingalls Wilder even talked about the Bloody Benders, like, back in the day, because, you know, it was in the time, a lot of these are in the time when it took a long time to figure out someone was missing, because there's no phones,
no
you know.
GPS, kids.
Isolation.
Yeah, which is exactly the case in this. The girls go away to the big city and don't come back, and no one comes looking for them for a long time, so. Yeah. But anyway, those are some of my favorite true crimes, and a lot of the good stuff that I was going to bring up was checked out, which is a good thing.
Yeah, well, that is a good thing. Rick Geary is the one to check out. So let me ask you, since you weren't here at the top of the episode, favorite costume you ever wore on Halloween?
Oh, two. My mother made a really awesome Raggedy Ann costume for me in kindergarten, like turned a wool hat into a wig.
Yes.
And then also Scarecrow.
Oh, wow.
You know, turn the overalls with straw and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah, I think those were. I actually have a hilarious picture up. It's not my favorite costume, but it's the favorite Halloween picture of me with a cold, looking miserable, dressed as Dracula with a turtleneck on because it was cold out, but with my two friends dressed as slutty Valley girls.
Wait, when
this
was
is
this?
1985, so they're
okay.
Both, you know, wearing their striped, you know, red lips and hachi-chachi, and I was a miserable Dracula.
But the best memories are the ones that where we had a really bad time for some reason, right? I mean, that's another reason we like
Scooby. I don't know. It's, you know, with the turtleneck, you're like 70s Dracula.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Eli, actually, Ulotricus on the Twitters is piping in that speaking of Richard Sala earlier, he says his story Dark and Silly Night, written by Lemony Snicket, is another good one to check out. So there's another book recommendation. So we are at the bottom of the half hour, so it's time to wrap this guy up.
Holy
so,
smokes.
I know, it goes fast, doesn't it?
I didn't even get to talk about how, you know, why zombies are so popular now.
Well, want to do a zombie episode
in the near future? We should do
a zombie episode because we can go into the whole thing about John. I just want to ask John this because who knows when we'll get to talk to him again. Running zombies, lumbering zombies. I need your opinion on this. This is how I judge my friends.
Lumbering zombies.
Hey, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Although I'll go for my usual. Of course, they're not really zombies. They're not. And all
the
popular. All of the popular zombies are not really zombies. They're you know, really ghouls, because zombies don't eat human flesh.
They eat brains.
No, they don't. They're you know, if you go back to the Afro-Caribbean myth of the zombie from
I read the Donald Duck comic about it. Yeah,
they have nothing to do with gnawing on human flesh.
Well, Night of the Living Ghouls.
But I know we've redefined zombies, and that's okay.
Okay, but anyway.
But I agree with John.
Lumbering zombies way better.
Shambling, I like.
Yes, shambling. The shambling zombie is way, way cooler because then it's the building suspense and dread.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah, whereas the running zombie is jump scare. Bah! Yeah. Oh, come on, a dog could do that. Yeah.
Hey, look, they're over there. No, they're here.
Right. But when you see them in the distance and they're coming and then there's nothing.
And there's no way to, yeah.
And they're not going to get tired, but you're going to get tired. That's dread, right? So that's my.
I don't remember who it was that described it as, like that kind of zombie representing death. How it's, you know, keep trying to get away from it, but it's coming after you, coming after you, coming after you, and eventually it's going to get you.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it. So. Okay, cool. Well, that was a fun discussion. I had fun. I hope you guys did, too. I hope everybody at home had fun. This will be archived at comicsaregreat.com/CAG67. It will be on youtube.com/comicsaregreat. It will be on comics.aadl.org. That's all the places you can go to get this fine entertainment. If you enjoyed it, I'm going to ask. I don't do this every time. Go to iTunes, give it a star review, or give a thumbs up on the YouTube video. That would help raise our visibility to other people who may enjoy this as well. And don't forget to check out the links in the show notes at comicsaregreat.com/CAG67. Paul, good to see you.
Good
Happy
to see
Halloween.
You. Happy Halloween to you.
What are you doing tonight?
I am probably just going to watch some horror movies all by myself.
What one are you going to watch?
Actually, you know what? No, I'm going to probably watch the new episode of Supernatural, which is like a little horror movie every week.
Good choice. It's got that good-looking guy.
Have you guys seen the cartoon Gravity Falls?
Yes.
I've heard good things about it. I haven't seen it yet.
That show's amazing.
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest to watch the Summerween episode.
So, yeah, Gravity Falls. I was just at a comic convention this past weekend. I was at Detroit Fan Fair, and I was doing free sketches for kids, representing Kids Read Comics there. And the number one thing I was asked to draw was Grunkle Stan. And so it's all these 10-year-old girls like, draw me Grunkle Stan. And the parents are all going like, why does my kid want a picture of an old man with a fez? I don't get it.
What's a Grunkle?
What's a Grunkle? But yeah, I think I drew like 20 or 30 Grunkle Stans, and I started getting kind of tired of it, so I started drawing Grunkle Stan as the Hulk, Grunkle Stan as an Ewok. They still were flying off the table. So Gravity Falls, great recommendation. Everybody should watch that show, anybody who enjoys good entertainment. What scary movie are you going to watch tonight, John?
I'm going to introduce my wife to an old B-movie called Spider Baby.
Oh, I've not seen that. So what's it about?
It's kind of like about a deranged kind of family with Lon Chaney Jr. as like the head of the household, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of more like a deranged Addams Family sort of thing. Yeah.
Disturbing.
And didn't I think didn't that inspire Rick Veitch's imprint? Isn't that Spider Baby?
Oh.
And then and my friend Terrence Greep, who is a wrestler, goes by the nom de ring Spider Baby.
Spider Baby. Awesome. Aaron Helmrich, what scary movie would you recommend that somebody watch
if
tonight?
If I could, I would be watching Them with the giant ants.
Oh, nice.
That's a good one.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Ends with flamethrowers and giant ants. Always good for a fun time.
Because they couldn't figure out a way to make the giant magnifying glass work.
I would recommend Magic with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, that is a horrible film.
That is
great.
Yeah, that is a terrifying movie. It's ventriloquist dummies. That's the scariest thing ever. And Anthony Hopkins is a ventriloquist dummy. And Burgess Meredith being murdered by a ventriloquist dummy. Very
oh,
scary.
Give a spoiler.
That's not a spoiler. That's that doesn't even tell you about like the great lovemaking scene with Anne Margaret.
And a ventriloquist dummy.
And the ventriloquist dummy in the other room getting jealous while the harmonica music plays. Ugh, that movie's so freaky.
It is.
I tried watching it once by myself to confront my fears, and I couldn't make it all the way through.
And a movie that I can't watch anymore is The Hunger.
Oh,
it's
I don't think
it's
that.
So talk about disturbing.
Yeah.
It's just that whole thing throughout is just like, oh, I feel dirty watching. And it's not, you know, not because of the sex or whatever. It's just that there's just some element that they just do a wonderful job of conveying that this is just wrong.
Oh.
So.
Fun. All right. Well, hey, I hope everybody has a spooky Halloween and not too spooky. You know, it's the safe spooky, the Halloween spooky. And so then the spookiest guy on the block is none other than Paul Story. Where can we find more about you?
You can find me at Storyville.com, Storyville on the Twitters, Paul D. Story on Facebook. And if I ever remember it, Quest for Success on LiveJournal.
Oh. Are people still using that?
I forget.
Oh.
I forget all the time.
LiveJournal. Yeah. So, okay, Quest for Success at LiveJournal, and then
by the way, it's Quest with the number 4, Success.
Oh, so. Very Web 2.0.
Yes, exactly. Or Web 1.5 yeah. or something like that.
And so Storyville.com is where you can find My Boyfriend is a Monster and the Twisted Journey series
books.
And not Werewolf by Night because Paul didn't write those.
Sadly, I did not write that.
He just got scared by
I did
them.
Have a werewolf story in Moonstone Monsters, Werewolves, and a zombie story. If you get the Moonstone Monsters trade paperback collection, that's got a werewolf story in there.
So do a blog post on all these things where we can find them on Storyville.com, please.
I'll try and do that.
And we'll endeavor to do so. So, John.
Where can we find you?
Yeah.
NightmareProWrestling.com and John David Guerra on the Twitters. Or John David Guerra. You don't have to roll those R's.
if you're a whitey like me, David Guerra.
I can cheat a little because I've got Scottish background, so R rolling is not completely unknown to us.
Yeah, well. So. But yes, so John David Guerra on the Twitters. Follow him. He's on Google Plus, too. He posts all sorts of awesome stuff there. That's where you can find some of the awesome stuff.
There's still people on Google Plus?
There's a lot of people on Google Plus. I think it's pretty.
I got to remember to post there,
it's
too.
It's pretty rad. I like it. But touche. Aaron, I know you had to step out for a second, but is any place where we can find you just AADL.org? Comics.com? Gory Girl on Twitter is where you can follow Aaron. So,
nice.
Yes. GoreyGirl. So you're back to tweeting. Ah. So that's where you can follow up and pester, harangue, and otherwise bother Aaron Helmrich, everybody. So thanks once again to the Ann Arbor District Library for putting on this show every couple weeks. Thanks to Matt Dubay, Eric Closter, Tom Smith, Eli Nyberger for helping to make this show possible and letting me use this studio space. Thanks to Paul Story for hanging out with me. John, great to meet you finally face-to-face.
Yeah, nice meeting you too.
Thanks to Dave Carter, Dave Reads Comics on the Twitters, and to Aaron Helmrich. And thanks everybody for watching and listening. Until next time, I have been. But
I was going to say, as Sir Gray Astley used to say, happy haunting.
Okay, bye.